Hello and welcome to the Devon Wildlife Warden podcast with me, Emily Marbe. And it's a rather sad start to the new season. Many of you will be familiar with Elm Wildlife Rescue, based over at Seal Hay near Newton Abbott. They are the biggest hedgehog rescue and rehab centre in the southwest, and they are in huge danger of closing down this year. Find out why when I speak to Rick, founder and manager of the centre, a little later in the show. We also talk rat traps, his rather heroic rescue of a buzzard on the A38, and what you can do to help save Elm. We also say goodbye to Flavio, who's been our coordinator since the Wildlife Warden scheme began over 2 years ago. But on the upside, it's spring! The birds are singing, the trees are in blossom, and there is new life aplenty. So it's not all doom and gloom. The Teignbridge Wildlife Warden scheme is run by Action on Climate in Teignbridge, or ACT for short. The idea is to have wardens in every parish or ward who can help their wildlife in a wide variety of ways. I am the wildlife warden for Abbots Kurzweil, but we have many others and are always looking for more. We do all sorts of things, from promoting wildlife gardening and recording local wildlife sightings, to working with clubs and schools, and commenting on local planning applications, and much, much more. It's all about each warden doing what they feel is necessary in their area, and what lies within their comfort zone. ACT's Wildlife Warden Scheme would not be possible without the generous assistance of our donors, details of which can be found in the episode notes. Many thanks to them all. As mentioned in the introduction, our coordinator Flavio has sadly moved on to pastures new. He's been with us since the beginning of the Wildlife Warden scheme over 2 years ago, and during that time he's been an invaluable asset, organising training, offering a supportive ear, and being an all-round solid dude. He's moved on now to a new project in Scotland, and we wish him all the best. Here's a recording of Audrey, our illustrious founder, wishing him goodbye at our winter gathering not too long ago.
It is now time to embarrass Flavio. Right, I've put a few notes down. Flavio, you've been a really good coordinator. You've been quick and you've been efficient. You've been able to do lots of things that I couldn't do. You've been a consummate communicator. You really have, friendly and kind, and we've all really appreciated it. You've been fantastic at helping me with things that I'm not very good at. We've shared ideas together and found different ways of doing things, so that's been really helpful. And you've made the Wildlife Warden scheme an enormous success. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Even if we'd been able to pay you for more hours and pay you more money per hour, I think the time would come for you to try different jobs, different habitats. So we wish you an absolutely wonderful time in Scotland working with new teams of people. Please do keep in touch, because we will be thinking of you. I want to give you some bits. Okay. This first bit is just a copy of the certificate we got with your enormous help from Devon Local Nature Partnership, and we're very proud of it. We're proud of you for your help to get it. And then we get to giving you some little presents. We thought that you might get terribly lonely without us, and so we thought that probably getting some stuff in the post every now and then would be nice. So you will have Conservation Land Management coming 4 times in the next year, and British Wildlife coming 10 times in the next year, and every time you get it, you can think about it.
Thank you, that's really kind of you.
And then Sheila had this wonderful find, which is the famous and lovely New Naturalist book, The Highlands and Islands, which she thought you would also love, and I'm sure that you will. It's a superb book. It's
1967,
something? Yes. So what it's going to be is going to be a baseline for your surveying and your observations in Scotland. There we are.
Well, thank you, Audrey. That's lovely. I really enjoyed working with all of you. You're all a lovely bunch, and I've actually learned so much from you. And I will miss you when I get to Scotland. And it's been really lovely working with Audrey. You're a really lovely person, and it's yeah, I've really enjoyed it. So.
Now, you may have noticed that it's been a few months since my last episode. Well, I have a new job too, so these podcasts will no longer be produced every month. I sadly just won't have the time, but I will endeavour to record episodes whenever the opportunity arises, and I'm already thinking that I should really have a chat with our new coordinator, Vicky, provided she's not too microphone shy. It would be great to get to know her a bit more and to find out what her plans are for the Wildlife Warden scheme since she took over from Flavio. And while spring is a hopeful time of year for many, it sadly has not been the case over at Elm Wildlife Rescue. Now, I've been volunteering there for the last few months, and they really are a great bunch of people, and they do a fantastic job. But sadly, their rent has been more than doubled, and they just won't be able to stay open past September unless something dramatic happens. So I stayed behind after one of my shifts there to have a chat with Rick, founder and manager of the centre. What follows is a recording made on site, so you'll have to excuse the clinking dishes. The hedgehogs had all just been fed, and of course they only use the best chinaware. And it's very much an active site, so there are other background noises too.
So Rick, thank you very much for joining me for the podcast this month. And what people don't know is this is our second attempt because my first recording didn't work very well. So thank you for your patience.
That's all right.
So you're the largest hedgehog rescue centre in the southwest. Is that correct?
Yeah, largest on capacity. We need more room because, well, we could take more animals if we had more room. But yeah. Basically, yeah.
And how many have you got here at the moment?
I'm not totally sure because with the weather window, we've had this warm spell. Mm. So I think it's probably about 100 and I'm guessing 120, 140.
Yeah.
So we were 220 during the worst of it.
Yeah.
But because I'm on the rescue side, it's hard for me to, you know, I deal with all the incomings.
And, yeah.
And Jack deals with the ones going out and. So, yeah, I can't balance it all, to be honest.
I bet it changes daily anyway.
Yeah, it does.
And
yeah.
Then what's your maximum? How many can you have?
Well, it's 220. It is. We have had over that, but it was, I mean, 220 is even, that's pushing it.
That's a lot, yeah.
It is.
Is that with hoglets and more than one in a cage and
no,
stuff
that's
like that?
No, it's normally the winter period.
Yeah.
So we have, the winter period is... It's a funny time because it's quite hectic once they're first coming in, and then you get this horrible period where basically they either haven't made it, or they're hibernating.
Sure.
So you get that period sort of like it didn't change every year because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of like December, it has been sort of like November, December. This year it was December, January was quiet. You know, we go to being full.
Yeah.
So we're busy. But not really many coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to ramp up again. And we're now seeing the results of the winter. And we're getting a lot of really sick hedgehogs coming in.
Yeah, I think last time we spoke, you said you were anticipating that would happen. So why was that? Because of the weather?
Yeah, well, ideally what you'd like for a hedgehog is to get to the winter period, it get really cold, they'll snuggle down and hibernate. So that once they're hibernating, they don't use up their resources.
Mm-hmm.
So their body temperature drops, their pulse drops, everything like that. So they basically, they can sleep through. But the problem down here, and I guess I can't say for the rest of the UK, but mostly down here, is that we don't really get very cold spells, or if we do get cold spells, they're very short. And then they come in and out of they go into... It's like a semi-torpor state, so it's not full. So there's levels of it,
mm-hmm.
So they don't go into a full, proper one. And then if the temperature changes, they're back out again.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as that temperature changes, they're back out again, looking for food. Because of the winter, there's no food around. So then they use up the resources. So going back to what you were saying, last year we'd expect to see. The end of sort of like really young hoglets in October time, and we were still seeing them edging into December.
Right.
And course, the weather was mild, really, way up until sort of like Christmas time, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So they were still out there. They were getting thinner and thinner. And so, yeah, so it has come to fruition that we are now seeing them. Unfortunately, a lot of them aren't making it in time. People are holding on to them, mm-hmm. Which is not great. As soon as you find one, you need to contact us or contact whoever you want to do, yeah. And do it straight away, because they won't last.
When you say find one, I take it you mean like during the day rather than, because obviously I would imagine people do just see them foraging at night anyway, so people shouldn't just pick up any hedgehog they see.
No, there is a bit of a, at this time of year, ideally you don't want to be picking them up at night, but sometimes if you see a hedgehog that's wobbling and stumbling mm-hmm. in the dark, and especially if you look at them, telltale sign for a hedgehog really should be rounded.
Yeah.
They're like a little ballish, aren't they? Well, especially if they've got a lot of food, you know, they've done well on food. But if you see one that's pinched in at the back end, so they're really narrow at the back mm-hmm. end, and especially if you can see the spine, then they're obviously malnourished.
Okay.
The easiest time to identify that is if they come out during the day. Mm-hmm. But even when you think of that, by the time they've come out during the day, they've been sick for weeks, possibly.
Right.
So this is why they need to, you know, they need to get in, yeah. Sort of like ASAP, really.
And get them fed.
Feeding is not a... I've taken a real stance on this, and we've tried to do it in the past. So if you find one you think is in trouble, and this is the same for most wildlife, don't feed it.
Okay.
But the problem is, if you feed an animal, especially if you feed it too long and it's malnourished, you can basically put its stomach, it's all into sort of like shutdown mode. Mm-hmm. So basically it gets overloaded.
Same principle with people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same thing with people.
You see this with people in like famine-struck areas.
Absolutely the same, yeah. So if you have that sort of, they have to eat very small amounts, mm-hmm. build themselves back up again. And we've seen it time and time again. You know, so now my stance is, don't feed it.
Okay, just give it some water.
You can offer it water.
Put it in a box.
Heat is the big thing.
Right.
So once they come into us, they go straight into incubator. So our procedure when they come in is incubator, make sure it gets up to a temperature where it's warm, its body temperature's up, it's warm. Mm-hmm. Then we can give it warm subcut fluids, so we inject fluids into them. They won't take enough orally, okay. So we have to give them... That's like being on an IV, uh-huh. Being on a drip. And then we'll do that until we feel they're rehydrated enough, and then we'll introduce them into food. And then basically, then we'll do some testing on them to see what... It could be an injury.
Yeah.
Or it could be all sorts, couldn't it? Poisoning's mm-hmm. a big problem. I don't know if we can touch on that in a while, because that's become a real issue.
Right.
And injuries and internal parasites. That's so even if they come in as injury because of the stress or other reasons, the internal parasite burden can increase because of the stress.
Right.
So it's a real...
A bit of a minefield, isn't it?
It is.
So what someone might think, oh, you know, this hedgehog looks a bit thin, I'll give it some food and then send it on its way, but that's not necessarily going to help.
No, this is sort of like the... And we still haven't got... I'm hoping eventually we'll get away from that mindset, because it's just not doing them as a species any favours.
Okay.
So we're still getting the likes of the older type of, or you know, person in the village who... take side hedgehogs in, and I'll take my hedgehog to them, and they basically feed them. They might feed well. I mean, we get them. They might, you know, they'll feed well. But the next thing you know, they've just either died, or you think they're okay, you release them, and then they die.
Okay.
So because of the parasite burn, basically.
And so, what do you do? Do you have some sort of treatment for parasites? I take it.
Yeah, we have several other. There are four main parasites. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we do fecal sampling, so we test them for any of the four main parasites. We're obviously looking for any others at the mm-hmm. same time and anything untoward. And then every parasite has got its own treatment, and we have some that we can cross over. So it's with a lot of things. So if you don't get if it's not responding to that treatment well, you cross over and try another one.
Oh, I see.
And they have their own complementary antibiotics that go with them.
Right.
So we don't blanket treat. Mm-hmm. I'm really against blanket treatment because one with antibiotics is, it's the same as humans.
You flood the wildlife. It's going to build up the resistance.
Yeah, the resistance is there. So, and you never know what you can't gauge. So you want to be able to gauge it. So you want to, With your fecal sampling, you gauge how much the parasite burden is, and then you can come back to it once you've treated it and see what it is then. Mm-hmm. You know, has it gone completely, or is it slightly ebbing?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no control with blanket treatments.
I agree, yeah. So where are they getting these parasites from? Is this just because they're unwell, the things that are naturally in their system are just able to grow out of control, or?
A lot of it's natural, because mm-hmm. even if we have hoglets in, so when we have hoglets, that's passed on from the mother.
Okay.
So when you say natural, I mean they don't need them, mm-hmm. but they're naturally there.
Yeah.
A lot of it is from their food sources. So the fallacy is that hedgehogs eat snails and slugs.
Yep. And worms, yeah.
And
they do eat worms, actually.
They do eat worms, yeah. But worms carry their own parasites.
Sure.
So, but they all carry their own parasites. But the slugs and snail thing is that it's, people think, oh, you know, we've had it lately. Oh, I'll have one for my garden because it'll eat the slugs and snails. They're their last resort.
Right.
And this is part of the problem where we have coming up to the winter. And they're insectivores, but they will eat carrion. So they'll eat anything that's, mm-hmm. that's died, they'll eat it. So that comes back to the rat poison again. So they get into those winter months, the only thing that's really lasting out are slugs and snails, and mm. they carry such a huge burden of all sorts.
Do you know
of
what?
Stuff.
I did actually read up once on whether you can eat snails, and one of the things you have to do is like soak them for days to get the parasites and stuff out of them before they can be fit for human consumption as
yeah,
well.
I mean, if
not
want...
that I'm that keen on eating snails, but I was
no.
just interested.
I mean, to be honest, before we started this, I always. I think, no, I've eaten snails, and you never really think so much. You want to have a look down a microscope once you've done it. once you look at those, like, lungworms and stuff like that, you think, you're all right.
I didn't do the parasitology unit at university, but my husband did, so I think he said it was enough to put you off quite a few
things. Yeah, there's some really entertaining little fluke of the absolute...
They're the flatwormy ones, aren't they? Flukes.
Well, they're not completely flat, I don't think, but you see them a lot of the time. They'll catch the eggs in a fecal sample, but sometimes you'll catch the whole fluke. And it really is a monster. It's a mouthpiece with a, where the stomach is, it's got a sucker. So it will attach itself on and then it'll just eat its way into an organ or something, you know, an internal organ or something like that.
Yuck.
And sometimes you'll catch them, and then when you do catch them on a scope, if you've got a big enough sample, they are laden with all these eggs, and it's just like, oh.
Oh, yep. Poor hogs, yeah. With all this going on
nightmare.
Inside them. So, I mean, we probably shouldn't make the whole interview about parasites, but what are the main reasons then that they come to you? Obviously, if they're underweight, if they're looking unwell, they come in. Are there other reasons? Do they get hit by strimmers and mowers and things?
Yeah, strimmers are a big issue. We're coming up to that period now, so we're going to have to put a post out. So, you know, if you're ever going to use a strimmer, and it is a little killing machine, really. It's not just hedgehogs. If you're strimming, walk the ground. It's not difficult. Walk the ground. Or if you've got a thick growth thicket to go through. Start off high, work your way down. So there's nothing wrong with it. Yeah, start off high, because you don't get it all down in one go in any case, but start off high, work your way down. And it gives the animals a chance. They're the sort of animals which, unlike a mouse or something like that, or a stoat, or, you know, it's hiding in the undergrowth or something like that, they'll scurry off. They'll just freeze.
Yeah.
They'll hear it coming and they'll just freeze. And then the next thing you know, you've taken the top of his head off.
Aww.
And it's coming into us. And I'm not going to encourage you using strimmers. We have reason, you know, it's a lot of work for us when they come in, and we have reasonably good results with it. But they are horrific, really horrific.
I'll bet.
It makes you wince, it really does.
I can imagine. And you mentioned poisoning a couple of times there, so that's becoming... So I had heard, like, oh, you know, it's the glyphosate weed killers and things that are getting into slugs and snails, and then they're eating the slugs and snails, and that's poisoning the things that eat them. But actually, if they're not that partial to slugs and snails, is that really
it is an issue. It is an issue, because that's... So there is an issue there with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's more difficult for when they come in. That's more difficult for us to spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's the and now I'm going to have forgotten the name though. It's the anticoagulants of like the rat poison.
Right.
They're an easier one to spot.
Mm-hmm.
So you know we won't pick up the other poisons, but we'll see the results of it. They'll come in. You might try and get them through, and then you'll see them drop off, and then they'll die, unfortunately. So they last a bit longer,
mm-hmm.
but they'll die. But it's not something you can notice to treat. And the problem of treating the poisons is, I think it's vitamin K. I think it's K1 or K that we use. If you're not sure, it'll damage the creature. So you need to make sure that you know that it's a potential poison case.
Yep.
So on the rat poison side, this has become a real issue, and we've got one coming in today. People are using rat poisons and I really sort of like that is something that is such an indiscriminate killer.
Yeah.
It's not just hedgehogs, it's other animals, anything that eats carrion.
Yeah.
It's birds of prey.
Yeah.
Now everybody, you know, likes these animals, see the birds of prey. You might think that putting a bit of rat poison down is just going to poison the rat. The rat eats it. It doesn't die straight away. So then it goes off. It's a pretty horrendous death because they basically bleed to death. But they'll go off. Another animal see it. Another animal pick it up. Hedgehog, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll die.
Yeah.
And it's this chain reaction of how it goes.
So if people have a rat problem... humane traps or traps with poison in so they can dispose of the body and not have it wander off, I suppose, would be the more sensible option.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, a trap with... So this is the issue of the one we've got coming in today. So we had one a while ago where a lady used a trap with poison but didn't realise it was poison.
Right.
So that was an issue. If the trap is a humane trap, or a trap that keeps them in there, then fine. But you have to realise that poison doesn't take effect. It takes quite a while for that to take effect.
Yeah.
So it's a bit... that's a difficult one.
Mm.
But the humane trap has become an issue. So when you have a... If you think of rats... Now, rats, if you've ever seen them... And people are a bit fixated about rats, but... you're never far from a rat.
No.
They're everywhere.
I used to live in London. I heard the stats. I used to see them all the time.
They're everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. I mean, I'm not saying that's great. I mean, they've got a right to live like anything else. And unfortunately, they breed far too fast for their own good.
Mm.
But they'll walk along the top of things, top of table, you know, something in the garden, a ledge, or somewhere up high. If you're going to use a humane trap, use it up high.
Okay.
And the trick to those is that before you set it, put it up high, put it on a fence, put it on a table, put it up somewhere. Don't set it. Just leave it open. Leave it open and leave that. You might have to leave it for quite a while. They will not touch it if it's something new or there's some familiar scent on there or unfamiliar scent or something like that. So when you come to setting it, leave it for a while and set it. But we're having the problem now is that people are putting these humane traps on the floor.
Yeah.
And then the hedgehogs are going in.
Oh, so the hedgehogs can fit in a rat trap?
They'll fit in a rat trap. They'll fit in one of the bigger ones.
Yeah.
And they're going in there. Now, hedgehogs have quite fine limbs. And the one today that is going to come in. So, unfortunately, the one today, I mean, what a nightmare. They caught it in a trap. It'll be 3 days ago now. We think it's probably got a broken leg. Now, if that broken leg is bad enough, that means to say that animal's going to have to be put to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try and treat it. You can't put a cast on a hedgehog.
No,
we've tried. Them. It just doesn't work.
That's something I would like to see. Oh, bless
yeah,
them.
Yeah, we might try and come up with something different in the future, but you just can't do it. So we basically use a process where we'll let it heal under its own steam. They don't come out. Obviously, if it's gonna, you know, we'll try and manipulate it so it's in a position where it's okay, but the bones will heal. It'll never be right, but a hedgehog with an amputation doesn't do well.
Right.
They don't. So we started off by doing that, but no, we don't do that now because it just doesn't work. So ironically, a humane trap for catching a rat could possibly kill a hedgehog, which is. It's ironic, isn't it?
It is a tad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really sad. So when you get calls about these hedgehogs with various injuries and things, do you go out and collect them or do people generally bring them in here?
I'd say now very rarely. I think we're possibly going to have to change because it seems to be harder and harder to get people to bring them in. I guess it's possibly cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't really want to bother.
Okay.
When we started, I did I don't know, 70% of the collections, 70%. So and you just can't keep it up. You just
basically
can't.
Become a hedgehog ambulance driver.
Yeah, yeah, but you just can't. It's impossible. And now with me running the centre, running the phone lines, doing all the job, the many, many jobs that I do, I'll get the little violin out and me. But all those many jobs, I just haven't got the time now.
No.
So if we can't get them brought in, then we have an ambulance group. That sort of works on and off. So that's basically on a Facebook Messenger sort of like system. And I just put a quick short message out. Can you go to TQ, whatever, or PL, whatever? And then we try and get them picked up, or they might ferry them from one to the other. Yeah, we try and get it can't be a long process, so it's got to do that. If push comes to shove, I'll try and go. If not, you feel so, when you do something like this, you feel so, you seem to take on a responsibility for every bit of animal.
Yeah.
That's, I feel sometimes that we're responsible for all the wildlife in Devon because no one else picks them up. No, there's no other wildlife trust that takes in wildlife. There's no other, it's us.
So like vets and stuff won't take
vets,
hedgehogs and
no,
stuff
well,
like that.
Unfortunately, I mean, it's a mixed bag with vets. And most of them now are a proper commercial entity, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So they're restricted in what they can do. So the private old vets that you don't see them now, they're very rare. They haven't got facilities to look after them and they haven't got the technique.
It's experience, isn't it?
Experience,
yes. It's that kind of like, you've learned through all the practice with all the hedgehogs.
You learn to judge them, you learn to do that. And we do have a lot that have either come in from vets or a vet nurse has maybe taken them on and then realised that they're going downhill and then it comes to us. So,
I think you were telling me before that you've even developed a nose. You can tell by the smell if one's got an infection.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you open the box, I mean, they're smelly creatures.
Yeah,
they are. There's no getting away from it. I mean, you know that. I mean,
I've been in here cleaning them up and,
they pride themselves on their dung.
It amazes me how much mess they can make in 24 hours.
I don't understand how they, I haven't seen one yet, but they seem to back up the back of their cages and manage to make it like a nice little hanging in the corner of their cage. I haven't seen it yet. We ought to put a camera in.
I've seen some poop in some interesting places.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you'll open a box and it's just time. You just open a box and you think, it's an infection. So you know that you've got to find that infection. And on a quilled animal, it's not always the easiest thing to do.
I can imagine, yeah. How do you inspect? Because they're just going to go into a ball every time you try and touch them, I would
imagine. There are techniques of getting them out, but if you've got one that's seriously in pain or stubborn, so you have to, you have to judge it, so back into the incubator, back on fluids, pain meds. So we give pain meds as well, so I forgot about that. So you can eventually get them to calm down and get a better look of them. But yeah. Well, ideally, you want to try and get to it as quick as possible. But you never, if it is an injury or an infection or something like that, you never go smack bang straight into it because there's stress.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue, especially with hedgehogs. They've got no facial features. They've mm-hmm. got no, and they're quite tough little creatures as far as pain-wise. I've seen some horrific injuries that they'll carry on. You see them eating with no jaw. It's heart-wrenching. But so you can't always judge by that. You really can't. They're tough. They're tough to work with. It's just
not like my dog. He stands on a prickle and is limping for the rest of the day.
It's just like you look at his face and he's like the eyes. He's like, look at me. Look at my paw. Look at that. Now, hedgehogs, you don't get any of that.
Right. Out of all the ones that you take in, how many would you say, or roughly what proportion, get released again?
Our success rate, I always work on about 75%, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say 75% over a year, because in some periods of the year, it is... I mean, with this period we're coming into now, we'll get a lot in that just won't make it.
So we're into the high risk period of the year.
So
it's funny, isn't it? Because people relate spring to like new life, new growth, everything's fattening up again and everything's on the up. But actually, it's not so much the case for everything.
No, it's not. And it's timing again, like I said earlier. It's when, if they get in early enough and we can treat them, then they've got a good chance. It's always the bad side that you sort of think about the most, but we have a lot and we do release a lot.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I think, you know, if you look at it, you know, that's, you know, 75% that might not have otherwise made it without your intervention.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great thing that you're doing, and I think, you know,
I'd like to think
it's
so.
It's thankless. I know the hedgehogs aren't sending boxes of chocolates and saying, thanks for looking after me. But, but you are doing your bit, more than your bit.
I wish we could do more. We desperately need help now because of the predicament we're in. But I really wish we could do more. I wish we could do more wildlife because of I answer the phone. We get so many phone calls about you name it, every sort of wildlife.
Really? And like, was it badgers?
Yeah, badgers. Squirrels. We've had them all. I think the only thing we haven't had, and we nearly had one the other day, but luckily it went off somewhere else, was an otter.
Oh, wow.
No, we haven't had an otter, and we haven't had a beaver.
Right.
Which I sort of like.
They're pretty rare at the moment still.
Yeah, pretty rare at the moment. But yeah.
Hopefully they're on the up, though, beavers. You know.
Yeah. But that's... So, yeah, everything else we've had. But the real downside of it now is that the hedgehogs have taken over. And, I know I want to get back to... Mind you, saying that, we've got a buzzard in our back room at the moment.
So. Buzzard, oh my goodness. Oh, God. Yeah, because obviously you're not called, like, hedgehog rescue. You're just wildlife rescue, but you've become... hedgehog rescue.
That was the intention, you see. So before we took over the from the hedgehog rescue that closed and they donated their equipment to us, we were wildlife. But we were at home, luckily we had a big house, and we did all wildlife, but we didn't do hedgehogs because it was a hedgehog rescue. But then that all changed, but then it just got berserk, you know. It's just absolutely manic.
Yeah.
But I miss doing all the other. I suppose one thing is it's nice to have variation, isn't it? But it's also the thought that the animals are out there that are not getting help. A bit like the buzzard the other day. Mm. I mean, that was. I actually had to go and pick that one up, and that was.
Go on. What's the story with the buzzard? I want to know now.
Right. Okay. We'll try the abridged version. So driving in. Had a phone call, buzzard, A38, down near Pear Tree Cross, on the embankment. And I said, well, we're a hedgehog rescue.
Yeah.
And a bloke pleading on the phone. I said, okay, right. I said, I'll drop. So I dropped Emily off on my way. Then another phone call. buzzard. Okay, so same place. So I'm going down the A38. So I'm thinking, right, pear tree cross, get slowed down, slow in the inside lane, looking on the embankment. All of a sudden, spot in the road, he's in the inside lane.
Oh my goodness.
So I had to stop in the inside lane, which was not the best of things to do.
Putting yourself at risk for an injured
buzzard. I made a bit of a rookie error there, to be honest. I parked too close. I was worried about the buzzard, parked too close to it. And then when I got out of the car, I'm thinking, anybody hits this car, we're just going to be toast. But, you know, so lesson learned for next time.
Yeah, definitely.
But so got out. I thought he was dead. But I slipped my hands underneath and there was a bit of warmth underneath and you could just about feel his heart. But he literally, his talons, he was petrified and his talons had gone into the tarmac and hooked in under the tarmac.
Oh my goodness.
And he was covered in road film, malnourished. It was just an absolute mess. So I had to tease off every single talon to pick him up. So I managed to pick him up, got him wrapped up, we got him back here, we did some crop tubing, given some pain meds, pumped him as much fluid as we could. And he'd obviously had a knock, so his left side, his foot was turned in, but that's sort of like straightened up a bit now, and his eye was knocked, but we had to wait and judge on how that was, because obviously you're not going to release a one-eyed buzzard.
No.
But luckily he's got his sight back. It was just basically a glancing blow, I think. But unfortunately, we've got no outside space. The other people that one's closed, that did Birds of Prey.
Is that the Birds of Prey Centre on the Totnes Road?
No, that's a visitor centre.
That's just a visitor centre,
yeah,
is it?
They don't take in any wildlife. Okay. So there was a couple of gentlemen. There was one but he was full. So we ended up in our back room making a lot of mess. But we've luckily, I went off to Long, that was another story, Portsmouth the other day, managed to get a load of caging.
Okay.
So drove up there, drove back, and a gentleman out at the yurt camp, it's like the back of Trago's way.
Uh-huh.
He's let us put, we're in the process of putting a cage up there in his garden. So wow. The idea is for a soft release. So
yep.
He's flying now, which is good. So we need him to build up his strength flying. We need to make sure he can eat properly. And he's pouncing on him, tearing his own food up.
Yeah, because you've looked after Birds of Prey before, haven't you?
Yeah,
so you
we've
do
done
know.
Quite a few, yeah. So get that done. And then it'll be the time to open the door.
That's a lot of effort for one bird, isn't it?
Well,
I hope he knows how lucky he.
Yeah, it is he. Well, it is cost. I would say it's cost us the best part of £500.
Crumbs.
That was just sorting out the caging and all that. So, yeah,
it's a big
amazing.
Commitment.
But. You know, if he gives him a chance, gives him a chance.
Yeah, well done. So, I mean, going back to the challenges of the centre here. I was going to ask what your biggest challenges are here at Elm, but you've got a fair few by the sounds of things.
It would take ages. Money is always an issue.
Yeah.
It is always. I would say it is an issue. We are very well supported by the public.
Mm.
They, not in mass terms, but people, if we need something and we post, then people respond really well.
Good.
Our sort of like standing order thing is sort of like slowly coming up, and that's well, we fall down on finding funding and grants,
mm-hmm.
and that's me. That's basically, I've got to take the brunt of that because I find it. I just find it so difficult to run the centre and do everything and try and do.
Yeah.
You know, I do try. So my aim for this year was to teach myself how to find more grant funding and things like that. And now, again, we've got a major problem. The landlord's doubled our rent on a unit which isn't any good for us, really, in any case. So, unfortunately, if we can't find anywhere else, that'll be the end of Elm, unfortunately.
So that's a big thing to mention, then, really, if anyone listening knows of funding opportunities or indeed premises? I mean, what would be your ideal premises? What are you looking for?
So we're looking for land. We're looking for like 10 plus acres. And we wanted to build a proper new centre. So it'd be like a steel barn, build that centre. And then we'd be able to take all wildlife and everything would be lovely. And, you know,
that's, so that's the centre dog, Newt, in the background. And, I think you can already hear. And the parrot, they're having a chat.
Yeah. but on the interim rent, I mean, we've got about 2,000 square feet here and it's not really big enough. Mm-hmm. But if we can't find anywhere, we've got 5 months now. If we can't
find anywhere. Okay, I was going to say, is there a deadline?
Yeah. It's twofold. The money that he wants, the billionaire that owns this place.
Right.
Nice, eh?
Well, I read something about the Seal Haynes site as a whole and the way it's being developed at the moment, but that's a separate political chat for another time, potentially.
Yeah, Well, while we're still here, I can't make any comment.
No, I was going to say, watch what you say. He's your landlord.
Well, you know, but I've got to write something. We've got to do a press release and we've got to do something on... I'm hoping to get some time on like new television time and
something. You've had some pretty good exposure recently, haven't you? I mean, you've had BBC Spotlight round and you had Anne Widdecombe. Was she one of your trustees or something?
No, she just came down for a look.
Oh, okay.
So she was interested and, she came and spent a little time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some tea and cakes and, it's nice. It was nice to meet her, actually. It was good. It was good.
You need to tap up some of those high profile contacts to see what they can do to help
you.
Well,
basically, I mean, we need to get better at this. But yeah, the situation we're in at the minute is dire.
Yeah.
So
how can Joe Public listening to this thinking, oh, I wish I could help. What can I do? What would you say to them?
I think one of the things is get the word out there. If you know of anywhere where you think that could house us. So, I mean, basically, as you're looking at, we're in two old classrooms, fairly big classrooms at the moment. But, you know, anything that it's got, you know, fairly large with room, because we have stacks of, I mean, you can see it now, stacks of shells with cages on and things like that.
That's it. I mean, the hedgehogs are piled 2-3 shelves high, and then you've got all your supplies on top of that, so
I mean, that's what makes it. I mean, it's just
got a lot going on.
It
still functions well, I have to say. Like the volunteers that come in, it's like a well-oiled machine.
Yes, it does, but it's sort of I don't know when you're going to have to try and find something or
I don't have that challenge.
It's just like, oh my god, but yeah, if people, I think. Getting the word out there. If you know anybody with land, or any farmers, and we're not asking, although we are a charity, we're not asking for charity. You know, us personally, Jack and myself have put some money away, and we've got someone that's willing to give us a loan of some money, so we can, you know, hopefully, if it was a proper reasonable rate, you know, we could buy something.
So you're looking to purchase land rather than lease?
I think that would ultimately, but I mean, if we can't, if that isn't going to materialise, and we have to lease, then maybe we're going to have to lease.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that comes with its own problems because of moving again from here, which is.
Well, is it when you're on a lease, you're then subject to the terms of that lease, aren't you? It's
you're never your own. We need outside space. Desperately need outside space.
What do you need outside space for, out of interest?
Well, one was going back to the other wildlife.
You're going to say, because your hedgehogs are kept inside,
that's it. Most rescues, and this is sort of like, well, I'm focused now mainly on hoglets.
Right.
So most rescues, when you have hoglets in and you bring them on and they're ready for the release, so they've got to a weight where they've got to release. They've spent all that time with you. Sometimes they spend some time with their mother, but if they're in with their mother, then at a certain stage you have to take them away from the mother, because the mother will get to the point where she can't.
Yeah, naturally they disperse away from their parents, don't they?
Yeah, so we have to get them to that size where they're big enough to go out. And it's taken a little time to... We had an inkling that this was happening, but it's taken us a little time to get to this and a bit of research. So we've been releasing, we've been checking on releases. So they're nocturnal animals.
Yeah.
We clean them out and feed them during the day.
We do.
So they come in here with a as a hoglet, as a thing the size of your thumb sometimes.
Oh.
And we get them through, ready to go, release. So we always, people that take hoglets from us, we always ask them to have a box and support feed, because they're not nocturnal. And it takes them a good, I'd say, 2 to 4 weeks before they actually get the hang of that they're a nocturnal creature.
Right.
So what I want to do, and what my aim for this year, was to set up external cages.
Right.
And once they get in close to that part where they're big enough, we get them out in their own little unit, get them used to foraging for their own food a bit more, the weather.
So like a supported soft release, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
But not a release, you know, a normal soft release is from the site that you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be like a staged soft release, I suppose, if we put it. So then the people would come in and say, well, you know, here's your hedgehog to set free from your garden. Or wherever, and hopefully they'd be up to. So I'd like to think the results would be much better.
Yeah. But so do you know what your
I knew you were going to ask.
It's a really hard thing to track, isn't it? I mean, you've got 101 other priorities, and it would be nice to have all the data, the follow up data.
Tracking them is a nightmare.
I can imagine it would be.
If you think of a hoglet that's never been in the wild, and you're going to stick.
I'm about to glue a radio tracker to you.
You could, if we had the money, I suppose you could tag them. You know, you could do, like, what was it with dogs?
Similar to radio tag.
You could do those, the internal ones. But there again.
Oh, like microchips.
Microchips, sorry, I forgot that. So you could do that. You know, if we had the time, you could do that.
That's a lot of financial resource as well.
It is.
Not just on the tagging, but the following up and the having to rescan them and.
Well, you've got to set up scan stations, haven't you? And all sorts of. I mean, in the future, maybe that would be a great thing. I guess what I'm doing is I'm, in my head, I'm quantifying it that if they're going out and they're taking X amount of time, say a month, and they're wandering around during the day.
That has to reduce their chances, right?
It's got to us. I can't say how much by, because I'd only be guessing. Yeah, if we can avoid that at any cost, then surely that's the best thing to do, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And I suppose if you had outside space, going back to the original question, then you could do things like other animals as well that
need to be
outdoors, the birds of prey that need to be in a cage outside or whatever. Yes, I can understand that. So Joe Public can let you know and spread the word about premises and stuff. What about the sort of smaller scale stuff that people do to support hedgehogs? I know that, you know, we often see posters and things on social media about putting holes in fences and putting food out to support hedgehogs and having hedgehog boxes in gardens. Do those things make a difference?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do make a difference. It's like with everything else, you've got to be patient. So we have people. So it's like the go back to the hoglet thing. We'll have. So we encourage people to either make their own hedgehog box or buy a hedgehog box. We sell some and support feed them when they go out. Now, sometimes they'll just disappear.
Yeah.
And the people come and say, well, they've just gone. But in essence, they are, you want them to be a wild animal, but especially with the hoglets, it's a big wild world out there, isn't it? One, they're just going to be like, oh, well, this is great.
Wander off till they find an
appropriate. What am I going to do now? You know, what what mess am I going to make myself? But, yeah, eventually they do come back. So hedgehog boxes are good. On a side note, don't buy the igloo ones. They're bad.
Okay.
So they get caught in the igloo ones.
Oh, do they?
So they're sort of like netted inside and into there. And hedgehogs are fair. Most hedgehogs are fair size. They're a bit of a squeeze.
Right.
So hedgehog boxes are good. If you don't want to buy one, you know, we sell them. They're pretty heavy duty, the ones we sell, but you can knock them up out of pallets or things.
Yeah, like that. I mean, Google how to make a hedgehog box, right?
Yeah,
it's not going to be a difficult thing to find.
Yeah. So there's those feeding stations are good. So feeding stations, if you've got...
But not dairy?
No. Oh God.
No milk.
Yeah, no milk. So please, yes, I can't believe we still go down that route. I still get...
People still not, do it.
Not as much, I must say. We're getting there slowly. It's not as much. But no milk. They cannot drink. They're lactose intolerant completely. No bread. They are insectivores. So yeah. No bananas. No fruit. No anything like that.
Yeah.
So
we feed here like wet pet food, right? Cat and dog food.
Yep, cat and dog food. Yeah, that's sort of like the best thing, the cheapest thing and the easiest thing. As long as it's meaty based. They do have biscuits. So because they've got extremely fine jaws and not brilliant teeth, so they have kitten biscuits. So, good reminder on that. Nothing else.
Yeah.
If you're going to feed
them... Can they eat nuts and stuff?
No, not really. They're so lame, aren't they?
No wonder they're in trouble. If you feed mealworms to your birds...
No, but they're insects. I know, but they're not the insects that they would be eating. That's the problem.
Right.
They're not alive insects. They're mealworms are linked to metabolic bone disease.
Right, oh my goodness.
So there was a phase, and I think, well, we still get people phoning up and go, oh, I feel them on bowls of mealworms. So they're linked to that. It's much more so when you're talking about sort of like younger ones and mothers and things like that. But the problem is with those, you could go on for ages with hedgehogs, couldn't you? I mean, people say, oh, they're only eating a small dish of mealworms. And then they go next door and they eat another small dish of mealworms. And then they go next door and they eat. And they like them. They love them. It's like McDonald's. They'll eat until the cows come home. But they are bad. And
My tortoise is the same. She loves the leaves that are the worst for her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, how would you ever survive in the wild? And the difference is those leaves wouldn't be available in the wild.
No, well, that's the same as the mealworms, isn't it? Yeah. So mealworms, sunflower hearts, which is obviously what you use in a bird table. What comes off your bird table, the small amount that the birds kick off and they don't pick up, isn't the end of the world. So that isn't. But feeding them those.
Difference between eating a couple of jelly beans and living exclusively on jelly beans.
Yes, which is a nice idea, I must say. Yeah. But, yeah. And peanuts. Peanuts. It would be okay, but... They get them caught in their teeth. Then their teeth, they have a problem with their teeth. And if you have a look inside a mat, they haven't got a lot of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So once those teeth are gone, and they're not very efficient teeth. If you've ever been bitten by one, it's not impressive.
I have not been bitten by a hedgehog, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Sometimes you don't even notice. So they're peanuts. No, not good.
So back to just give them dog and cat food.
Easy. It's cheap. It's easy. Just go down that road.
Just don't give them anything else.
And what are these? So these plastic tubs.
So we're looking at like a plastic tub that you would use to store stuff in.
Yeah, storage tub.
Yeah.
Flip it up the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put it on something flat, or you can just flip it up the other way and put a dish in there. Cut a hole in the end. Now, I'm just trying to think of how big. So if there is a guide online for the size of hole, but you can actually, I think it's about two centimetres, it might be.
I don't know.
I'd have to check.
Yeah.
I should have. So, but it's not a big hole. They will squeeze through quite tight holes.
Right.
So you definitely want a small, it is quite a small hole. And that'll stop the cats. So put a brick on top, on top. Your cat's not going to be able to get in there, and the hedgehog can go in there, eat the food. And the great thing is, you can just take the brick off or whatever, paving slab or whatever it is, take it clean inside or change position or whatever. Just an easy way of making a feeding station.
Yep.
You shouldn't really feed them in the houses. So try to avoid, if you build a hedgehog house, don't feed them in the house. Try and feed them somewhere else.
Right.
Nearby, it's fine.
But the only reason for covering the food is just to stop other things from eating it.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. It's foxes.
Yeah.
Cats.
Rats.
Well, you're not going to.
You're not going to prevent them anyway.
Unfortunately, you're not going to stop them. The thing on that is just do things in small quantities.
Right.
Just try and get. And if you have a rat problem, then you can phone us with for a bit of advice. But basically, sometimes you have to hold off feeding for a while. and then start again. Mm-hmm. So the population doesn't build up. Because with rats, but like with anything, if the food's not there, they're just going to move on.
Yeah, they go somewhere else, don't they?
And then back to humane traps again. Mm-hmm. But as I said,
don't
put them on the floor.
Because hedgehogs don't climb fences.
They will climb.
Will they?
But they won't climb that far. We've seen a hedgehog climb a natural stone wall, but it was only about, I think it's about 3 feet high, something still. Like that. Still impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you think about how many times body height that is, well, that's certainly higher than I can climb.
Yeah, well, yeah. But that's another thing about it. They're just, I always like the thing is when people say about hedgehogs and how they are much longer than you think they are.
Mm.
Their legs, this is why their limbs are so fragile. If you imagine a hedgehog, you look at a hedgehog, and then you imagine them stretched out with their limbs, they're virtually twice their length.
Wow.
Because they can wrench that far. It's amazing, their limbs. They are... when you see them run, I always think of them like the Victorian ladies lifting up their skirts and running along. They're a little bit like that. I don't know why that sticks in my head.
And how are you for volunteers at the moment? Do you need more bodies?
Always need volunteers. It's always...
How many volunteers a day do you generally...
Well, at present, we've got 6.
Yep.
So in the winter, we were really short. Mm. So last winter, I think we were up around the 8 or 9. So this year, we didn't manage to get 8 or 9. This is per day.
Yeah.
What we're going to try and do is... So we'd like to... I don't like us to drop too far... During the summer months or later on, the amount that we have in does drop.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that if we don't keep the interest with the volunteers, then it wanes and we don't have them back again.
When you need
them,
yeah.
So we're going to try and spread that out. And then hopefully if we do find some outside space, there'll be more to do.
Yeah.
There's going to be lots to do if we can find a way of doing it.
Sure.
But yeah, six a day, and of course it's 365 days a year.
Gonna say, you don't get the holidays off, I take it.
No. Well, Jack and I have, what have we have? 5 days?
Well, I know you've just had a holiday, but how long has it been since you had a holiday? Well,
since we started, so it was, what, 4.5 years?
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's like 24/7 working.
Yeah, no.
Like, it takes its toll, right? It must be
It does.
Hard
it does.
Work.
No, I mean, I'm laughing now, but no,
it's not an easy ride. Like, someone thinking, oh, I'll set up a little wildlife rescue. It's a cute, nice little lifestyle. It's hard work, isn't it?
No, it is, seriously. We get asked, and I say it as it is. And you've got to, if you think that it's going to be an easy ride, or it's going to be something like it's something cute and
just fun.
It's not. I think, apart from the time and everything, I think the mental anguish.
It's mental load, isn't it?
The load. If you imagine having animals, you can be, you know, sometimes you can bring an animal back from the brink. You can go along and you can be months into getting them up into, and they'll go, they'll die.
Yeah, that must
or
be
you,
hard.
Or you can have some in that you're working on, you may be working on, we may be working on them with an injury, or we're working with the vets, and you get to a point where, you know that they're not going to make it in the wild. Our aim is to get them back to the wild. We're not producing pets, you know, so... And then we get to that. Is it anguish?
I think that's anguish is a fair term.
The pressure on you is... Don't take it lightly. It's serious. It's not...
Well, I think you've got to care to do this in the first place.
Yeah. If that didn't affect you, it's not for you.
No.
But when it does affect you, it's not good.
Well, no, I find it hard... Just looking after my own pets sometimes.
I know
a wild animal's not the same as a pet, but like you say, I'd imagine you do get quite attached over the time and the investment that you put in, the time, the energy, the resources.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge investment for one little life.
It's always the dodgiest ones as well, the ones you spend the most time with. that are on the on that teetering on the edge.
I can imagine.
And they're the ones you spend more time with. You know, the ones that we spend hand feeding for weeks.
Yeah.
And it literally is.
And I bet hoglets must need feeding pretty regularly when they're young as well. Like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, when they first come in, depending on the age, but they're every hour.
So you must be taking them home or living
here?
Yeah,
we take them home. So they don't, you know, so we take them home. Yeah, it's full. It is. It's just.
It's a massive commitment.
I don't know. You just got to be a complete idiot, really.
Oh, bless you. But,
no, I mean hoglets are a nightmare because you're feeding them into the night. You know, you're just hoping for that time, and you sort of as they put on weight and as they go to different stages, you go from 1 hour feeds, 2 hour feeds, mm-hmm. 3-4 hour feeds, and you can bet. And sod's law is you get a 4 hour feeds. And you think, oh, you start getting sort of like nearly a full night's sleep. And it's like, oh.
That takes you back to having a newborn baby in the house.
And then all of a sudden you get another load of them in and you start the process
all
again.
Over. Oh, my goodness.
It is.
It's like having a baby but not having been pregnant first, like, and not knowing that it's coming.
Yeah, it's like a continuous baby.
Yeah, my goodness, that is hard. So do you need some of the volunteers, I'd imagine, do they help? They take hoglets home?
Not as yet. No, we haven't. So we're looking into it this year because basically, I mean, all joking apart, we have been close to burnout.
I was going to say, so, like, it's an awful lot to take on.
Yeah. Yeah. I really hate, you know, when you say things like this and you say, like I said earlier, you know, we may close, and it all sounds so dramatic, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
It is the truth. You can't get away from it.
And if you can't give yourself a break, virtually ever, then it can't, it's not sustainable. It can't go on like that. No. I can't imagine. So,
well, it's like another thing this year. It's always a kick in the teeth, isn't it? This year. So we've got two employees now. We got them, they're on part-time employment, but it's employment.
Mm-hmm.
And our aim this year was to go to 3 part-time employees. And then the aim was, so the aim is always to progress. So to gain more money, and then they hopefully go on full-time, or if they didn't want to go on full-time, then we'd get another employee again. So, and that's to sort of like complement the side of volunteering. So that lets off a little bit of pressure. It lets Jack and I off a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how we're going to sort out my role to pass that on, but, you know, we've got to pass that on.
It has to be a succession plan, doesn't it?
Well,
what if you get injured and go to hospital for 2 weeks?
I'd be sat with my phone in my hand, couldn't I? I'm not allowed to. It's not.
So I think I've covered pretty much all the questions and points I wanted to talk around, but was there anything else that you would like to add or mention before we wind things up?
No, not really. I mean, I'm on the phone, so you know the rescue line is my telephone number, so if you've got something, you know, mm-hmm. try and let's not be, you know, the little, if you've got a little issue, you can write in to the Facebook page.
Okay, yeah.
So the main Facebook page, if you go there, there's a messenger button at the top, and we've got Gail and Emma that man that. So
and the good job of it they do
they
as
do,
well.
They're doing a fantastic, yeah, no, I should have. So yeah, they do, they, well, all our volunteers, well, we're all volunteers, aren't we? I mean, I'm a volunteer, I don't get paid. Jack doesn't get paid, I'm a volunteer. I'm nothing more than that. So yeah, no, they all do a great job, and if there's an issue or a problem that they can't solve, they just straight on the phone to me, or they hand, you know, send it on to me. So yeah, you know, we're happy to help.
Yeah. So what I'll do in the episode notes for the podcast, I'll reference the Facebook page and the website. So if people have questions, concerns, hogs they need help with, they can get in touch. But also if they've got any way that they can support you,
yeah,
then, you know, it sounds like any and all help is welcome at this point. And I think in particular, like you say, premises, funding streams, if anyone knows about grants and things that can be applied for, those kinds of things would be valuable. And of course, people who want to just come and volunteer come and help out. Like, I've been coming in, and, you know, because the general volunteering day is, you know, after the school drop off and then, you know, goes until just after lunch, it's very doable, even if you're doing the school run and got other things on in the day. you know, I'm starting a new job after Easter, but I'm really hoping that I'm still going to be able to fit in coming and volunteering here and helping you out.
So. I think it's weird. Isn't it? I like the only reason I'm not in here every single day is because I haven't got an office to work in. Mm. So I'm working the desk in the corner. And when I work in here, it's like question after question after question, and you know, and then we've got Peanut making a noise, and
that's the parrot for anyone listening.
The parrot, yeah. So yeah, I generally come in 2 or 3 days a week. I think it's a great atmosphere. The volunteering, there's cakes.
I know. I mean, the fact that someone will make me a cup of tea mid morning and provide me generally with cake is a massive
plenty of gassing goes on. And,
yeah, I have to say, I agree. Like, I've not been here a great length of time. Only a few months I've been coming in and helping, but you know, you made to feel really welcome, and it is a really nice atmosphere.
Yeah, and I'd like to think we make an effort at that. It is tough.
Mm.
It is tough because
you've got a lot of volunteers to manage.
Well, a lot of volunteers to manage, and you've got the stresses and so sometimes I think it shows. Sometimes it probably shows in how we look and how we converse. But
we all have days like that, though.
You know, but generally, no, I like it. I like, and it's nice to see different people, and you know, it's good.
Yeah.
It is good. Now, I think we have people coming in that some people need that contact.
Do you know, one of the other volunteers actually said to me that she thinks of this as her hedgehog therapy once a week.
Yeah.
And I said, funny enough, one of the main reasons I started doing it was I did want to do something voluntary and to give something back. But for me, I was working from home for a very long time and I didn't have a lot of contact with other grown-ups.
Yeah.
And actually, a chance to come in and, like you say, just talk about your problems of the week with someone while you're doing your hedgehogs or whatever. And it is a really nice opportunity to come in and spend that time.
I think it's important, isn't it? I honestly think it's important. I mean, you know, when I'm at home, so I'm working. I'm working at the office, doing all the stuff. You know, doing all the stuff that we need doing. And I sit there and I think, oh, I'm spoken to anybody all day.
Yeah, I had 7 years of that.
Popping all the phone calls, but it's not a conversation, is it? But
no, it's not a nice chat. It's not a friendly chat.
I think it's, I think it's good. I think if we manage to carry on, which I hope we do.
I hope so too.
Then the growth of it, and we'll have more people in. And I think, I don't know, I just think it'd be really nice.
Yes, onwards and upwards.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I know you've got a lot of things that you're juggling all the time. And so I do, you know, value the time that you've given
up. You're welcome. No, it's fine. It's a pleasure.
Huge thanks again to Rick for giving up his time to speak to me, especially as he has so very much on his plate right now. There's never been a better time to help Elm, so if you can offer your time or expertise, they really would love to hear from you. For now, I'll draw this episode to a close and hope that you all have a happy, healthy Easter and make time to get outside and enjoy nature. This podcast was narrated and produced by me, Emily Marbe, with music by Poddington Bear.